everybody. Welcome to the Lecture Breakers podcast. This is the place where we talk about innovative teaching strategies you can use to break up your lectures, energize your classroom, increase student engagement, and improve learning. My name is Barbie Honeycutt, and I'm your host for the Lecture Breakers podcast. And I'm so glad you're here for episode number 141 as we talk about one of my favorite topics, which is play in teaching and learning. Now, before we get to our conversation, I'd like to announce that I'm offering two brand new professional development programs for you this summer. The first one starts June 5th, and it's the Lecture Breakers Academy, which is a mobile faculty development and coaching program designed to support you in transforming your lectures, increasing student engagement, and improve learning. There are 9 different modules, and each one you can do in 10 minutes or less. And what's so awesome is I've designed it in a way where you can complete it through your phone, and then you can take your learning into our community where you can connect with other educators, ask questions, share ideas, share resources, and you can even get more information on topics that interest you the most. So it's designed to be very flexible, very personal, and definitely something you can do on the go. All right. So the deadline to enroll is coming up fast. It's June the 1st. Please mark your calendar if you're interested and contact me if you have any questions. You can get more information and you can enroll at lecturebreakersacademy.com. You can even try one of the free micro lessons right there on your phone. Give it a try and just see how it works. All right, the second event is coming up June 12th and 13th. I am super excited to announce the launch of the very first Lecture Breakers virtual summer retreat. Now, usually I do a conference, but when I reached out to you and asked, hey, what kinds of professional development things are you most interested in? Most of you came back to me with a different model, one that reminded me of a retreat, something where you actually come together, we learn with each other, but then we have time to apply it and come back and talk with each other and get feedback. So that's exactly what we're going to do. The Lecture Breakers Retreat gives you the chance to take a deep dive into 2 hot topics that are currently making waves throughout higher education. I'm sure you know that's ChatGPT and mobile mindful learning. We had both Dr. Jason Gulia and Dr. Christina Moore on the show earlier this season, and these were 2 of the most downloaded episodes recently. And so I know that you're excited about this topic. So I wanted to invite them to come to the retreat, kick it off for us, and lead us in live 45-minute interactive presentations. Then we take a break. You go work on applying an idea to your class. And then we come back together and we share ideas and get feedback. And I think we're going to like this model. Let's give it a try. Let's see how it goes. A little different than the typical Lecture Breakers conference that I've done for the last 3 years. So I hope that you'll come and let's give this a try. Let's learn from each other and let's see, you know, what we can do with technology and artificial intelligence and mobile learning. So a jam-packed retreat, but one that's very focused as well. So the deadline to register is June 10th. So you can go to barbiehoneycutt.com and you can also check the show notes. I will put a link there as well. All right. So let's get to this week's episode about play and learning. One of my favorite topics. I love talking about teaching and learning with games, activities, any kind of playful environment. Kind of breaks up the monotony of long lectures or the usual expectations that we have when we talk about the college classroom. I'm super excited to welcome Dr. Victoria or Tori Mondelli and Dr. Joe Biz to the show. They just published their new book, which I received a copy of today, which is called The Educator's Guide to Designing Games and Creative Active Learning Exercises, The Allure of Play. Now, in this episode, Tori and Joe discuss why active learning and play are so important in teaching and learning. And they both share their favorite go-to activities, which I just loved everything we talked about. And it prompted me to share some activities that I've used in the past. So grab a notebook or at least open up an app and write down some of these ideas, because I think you'll want to use them, whether you're teaching classes this summer or in the fall. Super easy to implement and use, and definitely are designed to promote student engagement, encourage connection and sharing, and of course, to improve learning. And then finally, they share tips and recommendations to help get students and faculty to buy in or get on board with this idea of creating a playful learning environment, which really goes against the norms and traditions we often see in higher education. So throughout this conversation, I know you'll see just how well their work aligns with the mission of the Lecture Breakers podcast and how it fits so well with the conversations that we've been having in the Lecture Breakers community. All right, you can get the show notes, the transcript, and the link to their book along with all of the other resources that we mentioned in this episode over at lecturebreakers.com. Look for episode number 141. All right, let's get to it. Hey, Tori. Hey, Joe. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. I am so excited to have you here. And I just got to say, Tori, we have met. It's been a few years when I went to New York and I met you at my very first trip to New York City, which made things so exciting. And it's so great to kind of come full circle and have you on the show.
Thanks, Barbie. It was so great meeting you. I remember you delivered a wonderful keynote for our faculty back at Mercy College. Mm-hmm. And I really need to get you out to where I am now at the University of Missouri.
That would be great. That was one of the highlights of my travels that whole, like during that whole time. It was pre-pandemic, pre-everything. And it was just, I went there. I spent a couple of extra days in the city, went to my first Broadway show, which kicked off this love for Broadway. And it just became one of those, it was one of those personally transforming experiences for myself. And so I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I cannot wait to talk with you and promote your book and talk with you a little more about the things you're doing now. And Joe, we haven't had a chance to meet, but we're meeting here, I guess you could say. And I'm so excited to have you on the show.
I'm excited to be here as well. And thanks so much for having me. And I'm glad that my home city was so transformative for you.
Are you from New York City?
For the past 20 years, so it feels that way.
That way. Awesome. Well, yes, that was, so I wear some, the show I went to see at that time was Wicked, and I still wear my hat. I've worn my hat through the whole pandemic on every single video. Like, it's become like my signature thing. Everybody comments on it. So it's just one of those things that like connects everyone. And so, yeah, I definitely fell in love with the city. Been there 2 more times since then on personal trips and just have had a wonderful time. So anyway, just some personal connection to both of you. So this is awesome. But I am so glad to have you here. I'm excited about your new book. I love your topic. I did my dissertation on games in the college classroom. And so I have a connection here to the work you've done. And so can't wait to dig into this. But before we get started, let's talk a little bit about what you do and what you teach and any teaching experiences you'd like to share with the listeners. And Tori, why don't you kick it off for us?
Okay, terrific. I'm on the faculty at the University of Missouri in the History Department and College of Education. My primary role on campus, though, is serving as the director of the Teaching for Learning Center. And it's a wonderful place where I get to serve every day. And we offer so many different kinds of faculty development programs and programs for graduate instructors and TAs. And one of my favorite formats is the community of practice format. And this year we've had a game-based learning COP, and it's been so wonderful with the book coming out and everything. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And you've now transitioned into also doing keynote speaking and writing, obviously. So has that also become sort of part of your professional world as well?
Yes. Yeah. really delighted. I'll be going to Thailand in June for a keynote presentation and some game-based learning workshops. And Joe and I have been offering workshops nationally for a long time, but it's kind of cool to be able to go abroad.
Absolutely. Getting your work known internationally. So that's fantastic. Awesome. Well, Joe, tell us a little bit about you. You know, what do you do? What do you teach? And just any teaching experiences you'd like to share with the listeners.
Sure. Well, speaking of New York, I work for the City University of New York, CUNY. I'm at their campus called BMCC, which is in Tribeca, where I'm an English professor. Been there for a long time. And I teach a whole range of different courses there, from lower level writing to advanced composition to fun electives like science fiction, et cetera. I'm also a game designer, both mainstream games and learning games. And let's see, teaching experiences. But one that stands out, which little anecdote, which a lot of people seem to appreciate, is people ask me, you know, do you use games all the time? Do you bring playful stuff into classroom all the time? And my answer is totally no, definitely not. When I get exhausted, I do my routine, but then every once in a while, I try to mix things up. So one day I'm rushing to class and I just grabbed some dice that I had at home. I figured I could figure it out on the train, whatever interesting exercise I'm going to do, because it's a Friday, I'm supposed to do something fun, but I couldn't think of anything. So I figured I'd figure it out on the elevator on the way to class, and I still couldn't think of anything. And then I walk in and unfortunately they're all there on time. So I start on time and I'm still not thinking of anything, and the dice are kind of shaking in my hand. So I'm like, okay, everyone, let's just open up your workbooks. And oh, look, okay, they're in A lot of questions here. And they all see the dice at this point. So I'm kind of stuck. I'm like, okay, well, you're going to have these questions are in sets of six. So I'm going to give you these dice. And for every set of six questions, you're going to roll them once. And you only have to answer the question that matches the number that you roll. That's it. And then you go on to the next six questions. And we'll do that for 45 minutes, et cetera. So what I've totally lame, what I thought. And they're all doing this and they're kind of just rolling the dice and they're falling off the tables and making noise and they're answering their little questions. We do a debrief at the end. And then one of my more advanced students is waiting to talk to me. So I'm instantly embarrassed. And the rest of the students file out of the classroom. Student shuffles up to me, smiling. And I instantly start apologizing. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, man. I know you depend on me. You like me to do some little creative, something to push you, but I really couldn't think of anything else. And he's like, but professor, I really like that exercise. And I look at him and I'm like, are you serious? It was barely a game. How could you like that? You're flattering me, right? And he seemed a little confused. And then his face lit up and he's like, I could see what you're saying, professor. I appreciate that. But it was random. And for some reason, I don't know why, my brain really, really likes random. And this stuck in my head. And one of my colleagues also reiterated this little nuance of information to me, which is that what you do in the classroom to make something more engaging, it doesn't have to be that much. It doesn't have to be complex. It can just evolve, in this case, a little bit of randomness. And that already gives a bit of nuance and creativity to the exercise. So I thought that would be a good one to share.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. I've done something similar with dice as well. And like you say, you don't have to turn it into an elaborate game for it to be effective and engaging and just to mix things up. Like you said, just something new, something different. And, you know, I've been really digging into Susan Rock's book about movement and learning, and her book is Minding Bodies. And that act of rolling the dice and picking it up and writing something down and there's a lot of movement there that can really enhance the learning experience too. And it's very simple. And I don't think we realize quite immediately. We don't realize the connection between the two. And I love that you did that. And I love that your student, more importantly, really found value in that.
Yeah.
Love it. Thank you for sharing that. And, I love the combination and the perspectives that you two are bringing here. Joe, with your experience actually being a game designer, both in learning games as well as other types of games, and then also being in English, and then Tori, your experience with faculty development. Like, this is a great combination for the two of you to come together and write this book. And the book, let me give a shout out and give you congratulations on the book. Let me get the title right. It's called The Educator's Guide to Designing Games and Creative Active Learning Exercises, The Allure of Play. And I love that you have the word play in your title. We've talked about play on this show in almost every season. I think I try to bring in the element of play and what that means for teaching and learning, especially in the college classroom. And I can't wait to hear, you know, your perspective. It's definitely something that's near and dear to my heart when it comes to playful learning. And so I would like to know a little more about, like, what inspired you to write this book? Did you see something kind of missing in higher education, or did you see an opportunity to really contribute and advance the literature as well as how we teach and how we learn in college? And Joe, let's just continue with you. So what inspired you two to come together and write this book?
Yeah, this is a great question. So first of all, the partnership with Tori is basically partly what you said. Like, she was already in the field observing faculty members' needs, working with faculty constantly. And then there's the lovely addition of the fact that we were already friends, we were already colleagues, we were already talking about this field together. We were brainstorming ideas and we thought we would have a lot to add and could push each other to do a book. As far as what we thought was missing, so I was reading what I could, which was basically game design books written by academics, part of the field of game-based learning. But they were always very limiting, I thought. I got something from them, but they have such a specialized language, talking about reward structures, player pacing schedules of a game, that they're really for people who are totally enmeshed heavily in the design of either games or video games, and perhaps instructional designers. And my audience was already including faculty members, librarian staff, who don't have a lot of experience in this area. So they're just wondering what can they take, what can they use quickly to apply. So that was the gap that I saw. I wanted to create something that would be able to be easy for somebody to apply, and not so much about games, but more about play, kind of like the anecdote that I just gave you.
Awesome. And Tori, anything you would like to add? You clearly saw something that faculty, you know, needed, and you had a chance here to team up with your colleague and write this book. And I love the focus on the ease. Like, it's not reducing the rigor, right? But it's bringing it so that everyone can try an activity or a game like this.
Yes. Yeah. I think for me, what I saw was an opportunity for Joe and I to create a framework, a sort of research-based framework for designing games to maximize student learning. So like Joe was talking about this, that many people in the space just really felt a need for more student engagement. In higher ed, we noticed some skepticism though too for using games in the classroom, that the fear of making these experiences just being just about entertaining students or just adding bells or whistles to the coursework. And, you know, that's, I think, an appropriate hesitancy. So Joe and I, we felt pretty confident that we could develop a method that would give faculty and other educators a surefire way to create games that align with learning objectives and to create games that give students practice and feedback on their developing skills and competencies, and also deliver on the engagement side of things. So we saw that there was a space, you know, to write a book about designing games, as Joe was mentioning, using our common language as teachers and addressing some of the concerns that higher educators might have. So I'm so glad we got on that path together, Joe. And I want to shout out our subtitle, The Allure of Play. The word allure is actually an acronym for our six-step method. So we really love that subtitle. And I think that's what our website, if you Google The Allure of Play, then you'll find our website.
Mm-hmm. So what does each one stand for? The A?
Yeah, I can take the first three. You want to take the last three?
Okay, that's a good combo.
Yeah. Ask where to apply the play, list the thinking steps, link the play with the thinking steps. And I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Joe.
U is understand the design, basically the principles, the mechanics. R is to run your, what we call your activity game. It could look like a game, it could look like an activity. And the last step, E, is to evaluate the overall learner experience. And speaking of the title, second half of the main title, to design creative active learning exercises. When we were first writing the book, we perhaps were a little maybe stuck or a little too narrowly focused thinking about games, but we realized that games is just a spectrum. So we just want to make sure the audience understands that the first focus to focus on active learning and to make it creative, to make it playful. Again, like the anecdote I gave in the beginning with the dice, it's not a game exactly, it's just play. But when you do that and you think about the parts of something that make it playful, it starts heading towards what could be a game. And that's certainly an option. And we're mostly done non-digital here, just pieces of paper, cards, discussions, prompts, nothing to do with designing video games or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I love this. Thank you, first of all, for clarifying what the Allure framework is. I did see that on your website. I want to make sure we give a shout out to that. And I love how you've structured this. And I got to say, just because of my background and what I love, I wrote a book on Unplugged, what I called flipped strategies. I was doing a lot of flipped classroom teaching and learning at that time. And it's all really couched under active learning, which inspired the podcast, which is all about breaking up lectures, right? This whole thing all goes together. That's why you two like fit perfectly into my world. And so the idea of something being unplugged is just like what you said. What can we use dice? Can we use them in a different way in the classroom? Can we use index cards in a different way? Can we play with these supplies that are typically not things that we bring into a college classroom to do this work? And I've always loved that. I mean, I love the digital space as well. I love, you know, the creativity there, but sometimes there's just something about being in that space with your students where everybody's not all plugged into laptops and everything. And so I just think that that's amazing. I love how you've kind of captured the spirit of play, and it doesn't have to be a game, because when you introduce the word game, all of a sudden now we have rules and yep. perhaps there's some competition and, you know, there's just a lot more complexity there. So I like that you're giving us this sort of spectrum, if you will, as you described it, of what play can mean. So I don't know if you want to comment on that, but I love that.
Yeah, it was very important to us. And we realized, and through working with people in workshops, that some people want to take it further and add a few more mechanics, add a few more rules, such as even simple rules, like you can only ask 3 questions, things that turn into a riddle, but sometimes they just want something a little bit lighter. So it's useful to give faculty, you know, what they want, the tools to create their own creative exercise.
Yeah. Now, Tori, have you seen faculty really sort of embrace the Allure framework and kind of connect with that? Because I know as academics, we all love frameworks and acronyms, but I didn't know if them walking through that process made this something that they actually feel like they can do without it being too much of a like a full course redesign.
Yes. Oh, thanks for asking that. I think I want to spotlight this amazing group of political scientists that I've been working intensively with for years now at the University of Missouri. We were just working on a course redesign generally, and then we had an opportunity to get an internal grant to infuse their American Government 1100 class with also digital and video games, as well as board and card games. So we've been working intensively this year. They now know the Allure method. They use the Allure method. We have one game that's going to become a video game. We're working with our studio. It's called Adroit Studios Game Lab here at the University of Missouri. But we're also just working on our own for various board games and card games. And I still remember the very first game I played with them, because I like to model everything that we do with students. I like to bring that playful spirit into the faculty development experience as well, because I think it's the thing that gives us vitality and longevity in teaching is mm-hmm. to experience that joy ourselves. And one of the favorite games that I brought to them really early on is a modification of Bingo that Joe created. And by the way, if you get on Joe's website, the bingo card template and the instructions are all available freely on Joe's website. And we modified the card to make it all about active learning and their exposure personally to playing games and recreation. So just real quick, if you imagine a bingo card, in each of the squares is a little statement, a prompt that the faculty members go up to each other and ask things like, I use think, pair, share all the time. Yes or no, right? And if they do, then they get to sign their initials in that square and move on to try to get 5 across or 5 down or 5 diagonal. And then the first person to get 5 in a row, you know, hollers bingo, and they get a prize of some sort. Well, they loved it so much. Again, shout out to Susan Rock. Get up out of your seats. Mm-hmm. We're not brains on sticks. Let's get some motion. Let's get some interaction and get to know each other as faculty colleagues. Well, they loved it so much. They said, we should do this with our large enrollment American government class. And so we created with the TAs and we play tested and everything. So now it's called Bing Government. And the students get to ask each other all kinds of American government kinds of questions. And if they can name the presidents who were assassinated or, you know, just random kind of history questions. And I just love that icebreaker because it's good for any level, any discipline. It's just a way to get the community interacting with each other and connecting.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it. I've done so much with bingo. Like really? What you just said. Yeah.
Really?
So similar to what you have done. Now, bingo is considered one of those frame games where like it exists already in itself, but then you're going to load course content or whatever it is that you want to do into it. And like what you just said, that was fantastic. It's so great to be able to take not only like an icebreaker, but then you also put the course content in there, like who can name five presidents or whatever, like whatever that course content is. And so suddenly it becomes very much aligned with those learning outcomes, which is so important, and the student success and student achievement. And you're also getting them out of the chairs, and you're also promoting collaboration. And I just love that. And it seems so simple, but it is so effective. I love that, Joe. Great job with that game.
And radically different from what many professors are used to.
Right.
And so it's like a breath of fresh air for them.
And students, and students too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, isn't that funny though, that even we're talking, of course, about students, we're focusing students, but that even professors need the breath of fresh air.
We do. And that's one thing too, with the, when I was naming this podcast, I was like, all right, what am I want to name now? Like, what is it going to be? And when I put the break against the word lecture, is like, okay, well, this can mean a lot of things. This is breaking up your lectures for students and student learning. And what does that look like? For some people, it's breaking away from lectures completely. Like they don't even lecture at all. And it becomes a totally different experience in their classroom. And then for us, of course, as educators, we're like, okay, today I don't have to be the one that's on all the time, that sage on the stage. And so, but no, I love this. I've done so much with the bingo, similar to what you have done. And I actually used it in a job interview one time. I did my presentation. This was for a position working in faculty development. And, you know, you have to, part of that whole experience is you have to do like a teaching demonstration or a demo, or like, what would you do at a workshop? Like, what does that look like? And so I did that. I presented my information and my material and had my content. And then I turned my activity at the end into a bingo game about me and my presentation. So they had to answer questions about like, well, when did Barbie earn her degree? Or, you know, what was her dissertation topic or whatever? And it turned out to be great. And I got that job. It was totally risky, but it was the spirit of who I am. So it was very authentic for me to go in and do that. But so just saying that, when you're talking about a game like bingo or that framework, and those who are listening, like look at something and say, how can I take this and put my course content into it? Or even introductions, or students getting to know each other, or faculty getting to know each other. So much you can do. And I just love that you have taken that and ran with it in this particular discipline. That's just awesome. Thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you.
Well, you know, okay. So we're digging into like some specific games. And so I would love to know some of your go-to games for when it comes to, and I'm using games loosely. So maybe I should say games, but I should also reframe it as just sort of activities that are sort of encompassing the spirit of play. Like, what are your go-to strategies, if you will, for when you're working with either faculty or your students? So what do you think? Maybe something that people who are listening, maybe they're just out of ideas and they're not sure. So we've just given them a whole bunch of ideas for tic-tac-toe and bingo, that kind of thing. But what else could you do? So Tori, let's jump back to you for a second and give us maybe some kind of go-to games or activities that you use.
Yes, I hope this one is helpful, because it is really to increase active participation in discussions. So I think that hopefully a lot of the listeners can use this one. Our colleague, Carlos Hernandez, also at City University of New York, developed this playful activity called Talk Tokens. And the idea is that when students come into the classroom, if it's an in-person classroom, you can have some poker chips, like maybe red or blue chips. And by the way, this particular playful activity is in our book, so you can read about it in more detail. But the idea is that Carlos really wanted the students to have balance, meaning, you know, you don't want any one student or small group of students to monopolize a conversation. And you want to give students who are maybe somewhat more reticent or shy a little more motivation or a little more structure to get in the conversation. So as the students are coming in, they can have a few red tokens or blue tokens. And then he describes to them just real simple instructions. If you want, that he, as the professor, will ask some questions, and everybody has a sheet, a little strip of paper on their desk that he hands out, and it says spoken or waiting. And so everybody starts out in the waiting column with their poker chips. And then as they are able to answer a question, they would play a red chip if they were giving a short answer. But if they had a long answer, then they would play the blue chip and move that from one side of the table to the other. So that looking around the room, you can see who's had a chance to speak, who needs to start moving chips. And the object of this playful activity is to get rid of your chips. So I really love this. I recommend this to a lot of faculty. And over the years, different modifications have been created. So for example, in history, one thing we'll do is allow red chip is when you are answering a question and giving a particular interpretation of, say, particular group of sources. But then the blue chip is an alternate interpretation. And then we also will let the students in their groups trade color chips. So they have a little bit of a resource management mechanic going on. Well, I don't really have an alternative interpretation. I need more red chips. And so they can kind of wheel and deal among themselves. So I think it's really versatile. And I think the amount of modifications is only limited to our imagination. And it should apply to lots and lots of courses.
I love that. What a great strategy and easy to implement, easy to manage also, which we're going to talk about some of the hesitancy that faculty might have, but that one sounds easy to manage and you can continue it throughout the semester if you wanted to. Like, it's just one that's easy to use and go to. So love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Great.
Tori, as you were mentioning that, it occurred to me that we were talking about the haptics of touching game components earlier, rolling dice. Mm-hmm. I was imagining those poker chips sliding them in front of the students and the rest of the class seeing whose chip was ahead. And I realized it tied into a learning principle that you and I discuss in the book, Visual Indicators of Progress. That's the name of our which basically gets into the idea that in order to see the progress that one has made or that others have made, it's useful to have some kind of visual indicator rather than trying to hold it in mind. And of course, video games can do this very well, show little indicators of how you're doing.
Love that. I was just sitting here thinking, I was putting together a Lego set with my son today. Yes. And even on Lego sets in the book, they have the little Lego man moving across the bottom of the page. So you'll see where you are from beginning to end of the project. And that just, I don't know why that popped into my head suddenly, but I mean, it is play. But yeah, you're right. I like that. It does indicate that. It shows you kind of your progress and in relation to others, if that matters, if you're going to set up some competition within your game or some cooperation within your game, like what that all looks like. So, or your activity. And I'll just preface and say, when I say game, I mean play and activity. It could be all of those things. But yeah, love that. That's great. Okay. Tori, did you have another one? Or Joe, did you want to share one now?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Let's see. So when I was first thinking about some of these ways that one could use games without reinventing the wheel, I come up with something that I called cut-ups. I was looking at the ways that teachers use cut-ups, usually like visual sequences or scrambles to teach information. And then roughly around this time, one of my colleagues, Julie Cassidy, came up with a playful exercise, kind of a game actually, that astounded me, really impressed me. It was the first really deep application, I thought, of the cut-up methodology. And basically, she found a one-page essay that was about crab fishing. And remember, I teach basic writing, advanced writing, also some reading skills. And she took this essay, and it was about three or four paragraphs, cut it up at the level of the sentence. So there was maybe 22 sentences, walked into her classroom, had about five copies of it, broke the students into groups of four, gave them each this mess of sentences and said, put it in order. She's describing this to me and I'm like, I already see all the benefits. I'm going to do this next week. So I took her activity, I brought it in, and oh my gosh, I actually have pictures of this. And I think we have a picture of it in our book too. But basically for about 12 minutes, the students are like utterly transfixed, just staring at the table, slowly, delicately pushing these sentences into certain positions. Then one of them saying, no, 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 I think it goes there. And I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe. Studying transitions, studying the actual meaning of the text and what's going on. So we're looking at close reading, we're looking at transitions, we're looking at how the argument, in this case, the process of crab fishing is developing. Then you can follow it up with giving them a little exercise about maybe explaining a recipe, thinking about the best order to put their own sentences in. And it worked wonderfully. And of course, it doesn't have to be just to teach writing. It doesn't even have to be to cut up sentences. You can cut up in visual information. You can cut up an infographic. If you were teaching perhaps a advanced essay in class, maybe 8 pages, 15 pages, you wouldn't want to cut it up at the level of the sentence. But imagine cutting it up at the level of a paragraph. So now the students still have to think about the author's shifts in argument, different things that the author is in thinking about and trying to make sense. They have to understand the essay, at least in part, in order to piece it together. They're also helping each other collaboratively. This could also work with textbook entries. It doesn't have to be actual articles. So this is an example of using what I call the cut-up approach. And it's kind of getting at one of the methodologies of our book. But I think I'll have Tori introduce this idea first before I say anything else about it.
Thanks, Joe. Right. So early on in our book, chapter one, we talk about how faculty as game designers can build engagement through simple mechanics. And we have 5 ways that are recommended in the book to make any exercise more engaging or playful. And so just to frame it up for you, you can think about pace. So can you make the pace a little random or a little rapid? Or you can think about the goal of that exercise. Can it involve some sort of reward like points or badges or candy? Or rivalry, like competition or cooperation against a challenge. Or one of my favorites, especially in history, is roles, such as introducing a theme or a mood, feelings of suspense, playing actual characters. And so these are what we call the 5 simple mechanics. Joe named these, Joe categorized these, and it made me so happy that they were alliterative. They're 5 R's, random. Rapid, reward, rivalry, and roles. So it's so easy for us to remember. And if we go back and think about the bingo game, well, the bingo game actually has just about all of these. It may not have role, but it has a little bit of all the others. The talk tokens have some of this. The cut-ups certainly have random. So usually the simple mechanics come along with anything that's playful. And you can always figure out ways to layer more in. And that guarantees engagement. It does not guarantee deep learning. For that, you're going to need the complex mechanics. And Joe will tell you a little bit about those.
So now we're getting really into the backbones of the book. At the same time that the book is discussing mechanics, the elements of play, what we call consider the elements of playing games, we're also talking about learning principles that we believe inform the design of good creative exercises and also good learning games. And these learning principles we're borrowing from the world of play, the world of mainstream games, because people who are already designing experiences for other people, even if they're just for entertainment, sometimes these experiences are very complex, especially video games. So they have to figure out how to put in established learning principles to help people more deeply understand how to play the game. So Tori talked about simple mechanics. We decided some years ago, I realized I was looking at how are people already using play or games in the non-digital classroom? What is something that already kind of feels like a game? And I discovered basically 9 different approaches. I kind of categorized them. I called them the complex mechanics. And the first one I found is no surprise because it looks like it's the most popular way that anyone uses games or play in the classroom, and that's trivia questions. So using trivia questions, usually for some kind of review. The second, what I call complex mechanic, would be simulations. So this is more popular in the high school and college classroom. This can even involve debates and role plays, which are basically kinds of simulations. Another could be cut up, talked about a little bit earlier with that river crabs example. Another approach would be classification exercises, such as sorting. or matching games. We might not, as educators, we might see this as the heart of learning, like to do a hardcore classification exercise. But if you design it carefully, it can actually start to feel quite playful. Another example would be trick questions or riddles. Another would be deduction exercises, which are very common to scavenger hunts or perhaps escape rooms, if some of our audience has played escape rooms. And then the last two would be brainstorms, which have a nice playful element to them, and doing interpretive exercises such as improvs. So we call these the complex mechanics. There's about 9 of them. And we use the metaphor of sort of simple engines and complex engines. Like each of these complex mechanics is held up by some of the simple mechanics that Tori mentioned. So for example, the simulations is held up by roles. Trivia questions has rewards, it has rivals, it's got random, it's got rapid, but it doesn't normally have roles. So we're going from the little parts to the big parts. Also, our book discusses a lot of deep learning principles such as identity and co-design. And these game packages that we're talking about already tend to carry these deep learning principles. So educators who are trying to create a playful exercise, they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can often think about one of these 9 approaches, and that already gives them sort of a venue and an area to head in order to come up with a really cool design, or even they can just mix and match things together.
Oh, I love this. Thank you so much, because that's really getting into a little bit of addressing some of the hesitancy or resistance that faculty have about bringing in play into the college classroom environment. And it's like, well, we have to be serious. You know, this is college, this is higher education, or my content is serious. And yes, it is. But through play, we can tap into some of these deeper levels of engagement, if you will, that you might not be able to do if you're just talking at your students for an hour. So I love that you've added this layer to your framework and how important that is to tap into that. And I actually want to talk a little bit about that. I want to go there for a second and talk about some of the tips you might have or recommendations you might have for, and I'm going to take this question in 2 ways. The first way is going to be for college students and getting them on board, but the other way is like for your colleagues, for faculty and getting them on board. So we know the value of play. We communicate that frequently. We show it, you model it through your faculty development workshops. We hear it from our students, how transformative it can be, how powerful it is, how meaningful it is. But that we still have this resistance in education sometimes, especially when we're talking about adult learners and college students, about the word play and games. And so what recommendations do you have for introducing games to students, to our college students? How do you like set them up to say, no, this is going to be valuable. This is serious, if you will. And I keep thinking, Joda, what you said right at the top of this episode, which was you were a little nervous when one of your students came up to you and you had just had this activity that involved dice and you weren't really sure what he or she was going to say. And so, Joe, what recommendations do you have for the listeners if they're ready to think about introducing play or adding more playful elements to their courses to get students on board?
Yeah. So obviously this is a mother load of a question.
It is.
Really vast, and it taps into so many things. And I'll do my best to maybe answer it from one angle. Generally, I found, at least with my students here in New York City, that they're eager and happy to have an active approach, an experiential approach, something that's a little bit different that the teacher is showing, but not always, or they might be neutral. And it doesn't help to explain and really help how they're learning, even if you're teaching, you know, traditionally, to do some kind of debrief. So I've noticed that, and I'm sure all of us have, that some students are quite used to being taught to the test, basically, or taught by lecture, and they get really used to it. So I think it creates a kind of anxiety that they need to be told all the information so they can write it down and learn it for a test. And so if you start not teaching in that top-down level way, but a little bit more amorphously or playfully or Socratically, the way that you're having a discussion for your students, Or even I found once I was spending too much time, I guess, talking about a book, and a student was like, "Professor, how is this going to help us on the test?" Right? So she was just looking, it's an English class, for direct facts, information that they can understand and regurgitate. But if we can find a way to show students that this is not the only way to learn, even courses that are heavily fact-based need students to practice applying those facts to scenarios. Those scenarios might be experiments, they might be case studies, they might be discussions, or they could be activities/games that are a mix of all these things that you're giving the students. So to simplify a little bit, an active learning exercise or game is basically an activity of application. The student gets to practice these concepts that we've hoped they've understood or memorized, what they can do with it. Can they meet the challenge? And maybe I'll bounce to you now on this story since I've been talking for a while.
No, that's good. Well, before we go there, Joe, I just want to say you nailed it when you said it's an activity of application. Like, I love that. And yes, we're going to take it to debriefing and reflection, but I love that you paused right there and said, wait a minute, it doesn't necessarily have to be a game. It can be, but think about the application piece. I love that. I just want to give you a shout out for that because I like the way you worded that. Yeah. But Tori, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I also am really glad that Joe brought up the truth about some students feeling anxiety in the classroom, right? And so, you know, to broaden that out, students can feel anxiety, not just with active learning, but in a whole discipline, right? Math anxiety is a thing. It's a real thing. And so whenever I'm looking for faculty buy-in, student buy-in, we can be transparent and we can normalize that a lot of learning environments are anxiety provoking and that they're not anxiety reducing. And how do we as a classroom, as a community of students and teachers, how do we work on that? And I'm thinking of the wonderful book by Sarah Rose Kavanaugh. It came out in 2016, The Spark of Learning, Energizing the College Classroom with the Science of Emotion. And Sarah's work and so many of the others she's citing from the sciences is like, you know, human beings get anxious. And when we get anxious, our ability to learn is compromised. We know that. And so what you start to see with the Allure method and with activity games, you know, structured via the Allure method, is you start to get social and playful interaction that has in mind, yes, we can help students relax into the learning environment. We can create low stakes, exploratory social space for them. They can explore, but they can also fail forward together. They can try again. They can celebrate victories, right? And so it's understanding that the learning process is a social process. It doesn't have to be something that we have a fight or flight response to. And there are several learning principles in our book. And I love the one called the sandbox principle that really shows states that the deeper learning, if you really want deep learning to occur, you have to set up those comfortable spaces. Where can students take risks? Where are they willing to take risks and understand from mistakes without fear of repercussions for their grades or their self-esteem or their pride? So I really love my work with faculty to remind us all that learning is not just cognitive, that there's the affective side of things, and we have the power and the ethical obligation, I think, to be really intentional about how we set that up. Other ways that I get faculty buy-in is around just active learning research, that we know that students learn better, retain more, when they are grappling with ideas, when they are applying ideas, not just when they are memorizing or doing mass practice and that learning evaporates and they're not very successful in the long run. So just on the student success imperative that I think we all hear about on our campuses and are involved in one way or the other is to just remind faculty that they're on the right track when they're doing more active learning, not less.
Love that. Thank you. And thank you for going ahead and running with talking about a addressing faculty and their hesitance. And I use the word hesitance a lot. I've noticed that I've kind of shifted my language over the years. I used to say student resistance to active learning or faculty resistance to active learning, but I've noticed that I don't get this outright resistance. What I get is a hesitance. It's like, am I ready to do this? What's required of me to do this? And yes, it's kind of risky to put myself out there in this way for students and faculty. Sure. And then once we see, like you said, you're sharing that research or sharing experiences, maybe you're sharing case studies from other examples of faculty, just like you did, of people who are using this methodology or this approach or these tools in their courses, like, okay, that kind of reduces that hesitance a little bit. So I don't know. It's just something I've noticed in my own reflection, I guess, that yeah, there is outright resistance sometimes, but sometimes it's just like a curiosity and then a hesitance to say, well, maybe I'll try it, you know?
I think you're spot on. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that just came to mind before we wrap this up is I just finished reading the latest EDUCAUSE report about teaching and learning. And one of the recommendations in there, I think, is going to align so great with what you're trying to do and what you have been doing with faculty and students. And it's about, you know, we're coming out of this post-pandemic drama, I guess, challenge in higher education. And yes, we are going to be offering more flexibility with our students. We're integrating technology very intentionally. We're experimenting and have more in our wheelhouse, I guess, when it comes to things like high flex and blended learning. But one thing that they said in that report was talking about how students and faculty are almost hungry for this reconnection in the classroom. And whether that's virtual or in person, but I'll just stay in this lane for a moment, that reconnection with each other and like what it means to teach and this, the like essence and spirit of what happens in a classroom, it's really transformative for the teacher as well as the students. And by what you're doing here, which is reducing that anxiety, leaning into connections and social learning and engagement, all of this taps into that. And it might give faculty, those of you who are listening out there and you're like, okay, this sounds great. I might want to try it. Like as you're returning to your classrooms and maybe you're taking the summer to kind of redesign things, maybe taking a look at the book, this book, and grabbing a piece of, you know, a game, an activity, a playful piece will help you get to a place where you can start to build that reconnection again with your students. And I just thought it was really beautifully written. I just did an interview with the authors who are doing the follow-up to The Courage to Teach. It's The Courage to Learn. And I think something's going to happen in education that's like, wait a minute, let's get back to what it is that we do and why we do what we do. And I don't know, Tori, if you've heard some of that with faculty as you're talking more. It's like, we just want to get back to those connections because that's why we teach, right? It's not just the content, you know?
Yes. I would say if there was a theme for this academic year, that's what it's been.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's talking about, you know, the new normal and we're never going back, but right, just this joy in being able, the University of Missouri in particular, is we have a lot of wonderful online programs, but we're very place-based and campus-based as well. And just taking off the mask, feeling comfortable enough to take off the masks and see each other's facial expressions, even that was so good, I think, for the human spirit and the spirit on campus. So I agree with you. I think EDUCAUSE and that community has always championed learning games for as far back as I know them. And there's just so much promise out there. And I think people can find a nice entry point with the allure of play because, again, like Joe said, we're not advocates of gamifying everything all the time. You know, our very first step A, ask where to apply the play, is for people to be circumspect about like, okay, well, where would it have the most positive impact? Where, if I did one thing this semester, where might I add a little play? So I think it can be as light or as heavy as people are comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you so much. And I will put a link in the show notes to all of the resources that we've mentioned and also to the EDUCAUSE article as well. Because I think that, as you said, it might be that entry point into, you know, teaching and learning with games if you haven't, or with play if you haven't done that before. And so this is great. Well, I want to make sure that the listeners know how to follow up with you and connect with you. So Joe, let me throw it back to you for a second. Where can we learn more about you and your work and how can we connect with you?
So Tori and I have a website and pretty simple. Title is Allure of Play, allure.com. So it's A-L-L-U-R-E of play.com. There's a lot of information about us, including links to our own personal websites. On that website, you'll learn about how we both run professional development workshops. You'll learn about events that we're doing in the near future, even online. So no matter where you're located, you could possibly attend some of these for free. We have a lot of free gamey resources that faculty can download. There's information about the book. And also was it 2 years ago, Tori? We created a very hefty piece on the Allure Play website, which is completely dedicated to helping faculty think about the online space.
Yes.
And giving ideas for how to design for online. We did a video on it. We have all these PowerPoint templates the faculty can look at. And the book, of course, also talks about the online space, but this is a targeted page on the website that has a lot of information about it.
Okay, awesome. And Tori, anything you want to follow up? You want to share any of your social media handles or separate websites?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm on academic Twitter at Tori Mondelli. And I think I would just add to Joe's comments that we love doing professional development workshops, whether that would be an intensive, you know, could be a few hours or could be a multi-day. And we're always presenting at conferences. I know Joe's going to be at Gen Con again this year and has some local New York City conferences he's doing. And I'm really excited. I get to go abroad. I'll be in Thailand and then I'll be in Germany at the Decoding the Disciplines Conference and the International Society for the Scholarship of Teaching and Learning in Utrecht in the Netherlands in the fall. So we have a lot of cool things to look forward to. And I hope we can connect with some of the listeners today. Thank you, Barbie.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. And yes, we do have a lot of listeners out there who are looking for conferences to go to. So we'll make sure we link those in the show notes as well, especially those who are interested in learning more about play and games and how to do that in higher education. And I also wanted to just say that, you know, I'm stepping into doing more Lecture Breakers retreats, these little 2-day sort of half day sessions. And this might be a great topic for one of those. And then if we do the Lecture Breakers conference again in the future, then that might be something as well, because I know we have a lot of listeners who are really interested in this topic. So I'd love to stay connected with you too and see how we can collaborate.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks for mentioning. Yeah.
All right. Well, look, thank you both so much for coming on the show. It is just wonderful to talk with both of you. I really, really appreciate your time. I want to encourage everybody to pick up your copy of the book. I'll make sure I put links in the show notes, which you can get at lecturebreakers.com. So Joe, Tori, thank you both so much.
This was fantastic. Thank you, Barbie.
Thank you. Just wonderful.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Joe and Tori. And, you know, I hope that it lets you see that you can create a playful and engaging learning experience and learning environment without having to redesign your whole course or, you know, design a very complicated game that just really takes you away from, you know, being in that moment with your students where you're connecting with each other, learning is happening, you're having a little bit of fun as well. Like, it's okay. You know, we want to do that in some of our teaching and learning environments. And so I hope this inspires you to at least give it a try, see how it goes. And I also want to make sure that you remember that there are 2 events coming up for the Lecture Breakers community. One is our Lecture Breakers Academy, a great place where you can come and talk about teaching and learning with games or creating playful experiences as you travel through 9 modules together with this cohort of other educators who are talking about and thinking about what it means to teach effectively in the college classroom. Whether that's virtual or in person. And then also June 12th and 13th, don't forget we have our Lecture Breakers virtual retreat coming up. It's our first one with this new redesign where you can actually get together with other colleagues and talk about, you know, what kinds of ideas you have for integrating a mobile learning experience into your course and or using ChatGPT in your course. All right, so you can get all of this information over at barbiehoneycutt.com. I'll also put links in the show notes. I want to thank Joe and Tori. This was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much. And everyone, be sure to get a copy of their book, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. All right, thanks so much for listening. Until next time.